a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
In his office, we're ready to begin our weekly news conference. And here's Governor Mike Rounds.
Good morning. I'd like to begin today's news conference with talking about two specific items. First of all, we had a meeting with the representatives of the National Weather Service yesterday afternoon, and they provided us with their most recent update of the possibilities of spring flooding and a little update about what the expected temperatures and additional moisture was going to be for South Dakota and the impact that that would have on spring flooding. To sum it up, it looks like we're going to have a year that could be very similar to 1997. During that time, we had significant, major to significant spring flooding over a large part of eastern South Dakota. I have disseminated a 2010 spring flooding map, which was prepared by the South Dakota Department of Emergency Management Services. It's only a summary, but just to give you kind of a picture, this map shows in red those areas where we expect moderate or greater flooding based upon the snowpack that's there today and the anticipated lower than normal temperatures over the next couple of weeks and the higher than normal precipitation, which is still expected. I would also call to your attention the I've also handed out a South Dakota spring flood outlook, which was prepared by the National Weather Service, and I think most of you have that made available to you right now, and Joe Kufka will provide it for anybody who is listening by phone. We do have it in electronic format, and we'll get that out to anybody if you want to talk to Joe afterwards. I wanted to just point out in here a couple of items that I thought were pretty important to share at this time of the year. If you go to what it looks like we're going to have for, they call it the summary of outlooks, particularly for the rivers in eastern South Dakota and a couple in the west, but the Big Sioux River in Watertown, they're suggesting a probability of 93% or greater of moderate flooding. Castlewood, an 80% or greater possibility of moderate flooding. Brookings, a 98% probability of moderate flooding and a 73% probability of major flooding. If you take a look at even Sioux Falls at 60th Street North, they're talking a 48% probability of moderate flooding. The Big Sioux River, once again, in Sioux Falls at North Cliff Avenue, has a 69% probability of moderate flooding. Haywarden has a 68% probability of moderate flooding. Akron has a 98% probability of moderate flooding and an 80% probability of major flooding. If you move on to the Vermilion River, Davis has an 80% probability of moderate flooding. Wakanda has a 98% probability of moderate flooding and an 84% probability of major flooding. Vermilion, a 72% probability of moderate flooding. The James River at Columbia, Stratford, and Ashton, a 98% probability of major flooding. Redfield, a 74% probability of major flooding. And at Huron, a 92% probability of major flooding. The James River farther south, Forestburg, a 75% probability of major flooding. An 80% probability at Mitchell. Mitchell has an 80% probability of major flooding. Scotland, a 92% probability of major flooding. Turtle Creek at Redfield has a 73% probability of moderate flooding. In the West River areas of note, Camp Crook on the Little Missouri has a 72% probability of moderate flooding. Little Eagle on the Grand has a 96% probability of moderate and a 66% probability of major flooding. Faith on the Moreau has a 60% probability of moderate flooding. Whitehorse on the Moreau has 65% probability of moderate flooding. And Plainview on the Cheyenne has an 80% probability of moderate flooding. On the Bad River, Fort Pier has a 60% probability of moderate flooding. Kadoka on the White has a 90% probability of moderate flooding. White River on the White, excuse me, is a 98%. Oklahoma on the White has a 94% probability of moderate flooding. The message that we received yesterday in our summary from the National Weather Service would appear to suggest it's not a matter of if we have flooding in this state. It's a matter of when we have the flooding. What the temperatures look like over the next couple of weeks is that we're not going to have any substantial warm-up, which means we're not going to have a slow thaw here in the next couple of weeks. We currently know that we have snow depths across the entire region, and these are all available from the National Weather Service, and they'll be providing a more in-depth review, I believe, today that will be disseminated to the press. There is quite a bit of moisture content in the snow. We do know also that the vast majority of South Dakota, with regard to the soil conditions, would indicate that it is already at its, in most cases, it's saturated, so there's not a lot of place for the water to go. We are in the middle stages at the state level of planning for the pre-positioning of assets to respond to the anticipated flooding this spring. We met yesterday with representatives from the National Guard and with representatives from DOT and with emergency management. We know that we have two current FEMA emergency declarations that we have in the stage of preliminary damage assessments now being completed, and we hope to have requested the middle part of next week presidential declarations for the Christmas ice storm or a snowstorm, and then the January ice and snowstorm. On top of that, we now appear to have significant flooding possibilities over a substantial part of our state. So it's going to be a very active response time. Our preparations as I say, we're in the middle part of preparations right now and to responding by pre-positioning assets. The different departments are being contacted right now to begin making plans for how they intend to respond to the conditions that we find. We've made requests from the local emergency management directors in each of our counties, asking them to assess the local conditions, to assess where they're going to have to be putting up shelters, where they're going to have road closures, where they have public infrastructure, whether it be pump stations, electrical stations, and so forth, that are going to be in need of protection or removal. We should have a lot of that information in within the next 2 weeks. Based upon their reports to us, we'll do an overall assessment of what our needs are going to be, and then we'll prepare how we're going to respond. We plan on using National Guard assets. We plan on using DOT assets. We will need to probably hire additional local contractors as well to respond to protecting those public assets, keeping them going as long as possible, building dikes where necessary to protect both public and private structures. But we will do our best to pre-position and pre-plan for stopping the damage as much as possible, and then we'll respond to those areas that have damage that we could not stop based upon you know, any unforeseen conditions or places where we simply couldn't stop the flooding from occurring. Let me move from there into today's activities. I have asked the state of South Dakota and local communities to observe 2010 as a year of unity. We'll be having a kickoff today in the Capitol Rotunda. The reason why we're doing it now is because 20 years ago, George Mikkelsen and both Native American and non-Native American leaders came together. Tim Geagle played a major role in promoting a year of reconciliation 20 years ago, and he has asked me to look at celebrating that now and considering a year of unity. He brought with him native and non-native leaders to make the recommendation that we not only celebrate what George Mikkelsen suggested and those leaders back then suggested, but recognize what we've done so far and then re-emphasize the need to continue moving forward, recognizing the cultural diversity that we have within the state, celebrating the cultural diversity we have, but also to understand that as a state, we have a whole lot more in common than we disagree on, and we all want some very specific things. Number one is that we all, regardless of the color of our skin or our race or our income levels or our party, our political affiliation or our religion, we all want this world to be better for the next generation. We want a better life for our kids. And we want to recognize that because that unifies us in trying to make things better than what they are already. But you do that by building on what is already there. So today, in this spirit of unity, we'll do our best to suggest to communities across this state that they join with us in finding ways in which they can participate, recognize the diversities and celebrate that diversity that really makes us special and that adds to the spice of life. And at the same time, recognize that we've all got a lot more in common than what will ever separate us. But bring that to the forefront. And I commend the leaders, Native American and non-Native American alike, that have recommended this to us. I commend Mr. Gallego for his interest in promoting this as well. And it is time to go back in and to recognize George Mikkelsen and those leaders back then for the last 20 years of a discussion about reconciliation, really of conciliation, of trying to build a better feeling among all of the races that live here in South Dakota. Now, with that, I'm going to open it up and time to answer questions that you have.
Governor, this flooding, when is it expected to begin?
The National Weather Service has indicated that we will not expect a warm-up of any significance probably until sometime in March. We would normally see it around the 15th of March, but this year we suspect because of the temperature of the snow right now that it'll probably be delayed a week, 10 days beyond that. So the earliest, unless we have a real significant change in our current weather conditions, probably nothing earlier than the third to fourth week in March. Traditionally, in looking back at the other floods that we've had within the state, mid to late April is probably where the most significant flooding will occur, sometime into May, depending upon how much it is. It'll also depend upon the ice conditions on the rivers. Right now, we've got substantial ice jams that will occur on the Jim and the Big Sioux. We're expecting that. West River will have the same kind of problems. We'll have ice jams on the White, the Bad, and so forth. So a lot of it will be based on local issues among ice jams that occur. But really, nothing for probably the next month. Then after that, it's going to depend upon what changes might occur. We think there's going to be a little bit of a thaw coming, a little bit of a change coming, a little bit of a warm-up the latter part of February and the very first part of March. But based upon how cold it is right now and the colder temperatures of the existing snowpack, we don't expect that to overcome and to really get the ice to such a condition that it's ready to melt.
You expect it to be an extended period of flooding as opposed to just a week or two?
Well, we hope our best case scenario would be a 60-day slow thaw. The worst thing that could happen to us probably are a couple, 4 or 5 days in a row of 60-plus degree temperatures where we have a very quick thaw, because then we will see substantial flooding in a very short period of time, flash flooding type of stuff. And that does concern us because that's where you get your ice jams. If you know, we can't predict exactly how it's going to go, but we have to be prepared for the worst. We hope for the best, prepare for the worst. The worst would be a significant warm-up sometime in that latter part of March, first part of April, probably.
Governor, the one thing that could lessen this, I take it, would be a really slow, measured thaw and steps.
That's right. The in the case of the way that the best case scenario, ice is off the rivers in southeast South Dakota with a gradual melt in the northeast. That's the best that we can expect. The worst case scenario, 2 days of 60 degree temperatures in northeast South Dakota with ice still on the rivers in southeast South Dakota. Those are the worst case. What? I'm sorry? Oh, yeah, the other side of it, as we talked about yesterday, if during that time in which we have a warm-up and rather than snow we get, you know, a 2-inch rain, that would definitely make matters a lot worse. So, you know, we don't know what this is going to happen. All we know is that we have to start planning now, and we have been, and pre-positioning assets so that they're ready to go when the time comes. We are continuing to add to our stockpile of sandbags. We'll get the sand out into those areas where it's necessary. We'll assist the local communities that will really be on the front lines with National Guard assets, DOT assets, private contractors, and so forth. But this will probably turn out to be a very significant spring flood, very similar to what we had, as the National Weather Service says, it's pretty close to the 1997 flood event that occurred.
What should people be doing just in these areas to start preparing?
Let me break this down. Local individuals should be taking a look at what they can do for their own houses based upon what the National Flood or Weather Service is saying is going to occur in their areas. A number of our smaller communities will have homes that may have to be evacuated. Placing items that are in basements most certainly should get them out of your basements before the flooding occurs. I think, you know, I remember Aberdeen and the real challenges we had a couple of years ago with flooding in Aberdeen, and so many of the basements had real problems in them. Personal property is something that you can do something about. Get the personal property up into the higher levels in a home. Plan on where you're going to be. You know, where you would take shelter if your home is, if we can't protect your homes. Local leaders in the different communities, we're going to be asking them. We are right now waiting on assessments from them in terms of what their most critical public infrastructure is. And by that I mean, you know, the pump stations that have to be protected, the electrical substations that have to be protected, which roads and bridges are going to be most at risk. What you're going to be doing to find ways to get at people that might be separated from their jobs or might be stuck out in areas that we're going to have to get them out before the floodwaters reach their farms or their homes. I think a lot of that has to do with pre-planning and getting people prepared for what they're going to be in for this year. The emergency managers are currently delivering to us that information. I have directed the Department of Public Safety and specifically Emergency Management to itemize a deadline for responses to our requests for information about local needs. And if we don't get those responses back in the appropriate fashion, to do the follow-up with them, offering assistance. And if we receive no response at that point, then we're going to go in and do the assessment ourselves. But I expect to have very good local response, and where we're not getting a good local response, in some cases it's just a matter of helping them to get the response done, and we'll provide resources to them to do that. Once that's done, we'll do the aggregation of what our needs are going to be, and then how we get it out and plan which locations will need the assistance first and try to get it from one location to another. We plan on using our correctional assets as well, in this case individuals who are currently incarcerated that have been trained and that have proven themselves to be good at filling sandbags, and we can trust them, those trustees. We'll take them out and we'll put them to work filling sandbags and anything else that we can do to mitigate some of those possible flood losses.
You mentioned hiring private contractors will probably be necessary. Obviously, that raises the question of money, and which is something the state doesn't have a particularly large amount at this time. Is there any possibility of some special levy being necessary to deal with this, to shift that?
Yeah, so the first thing that we'll do is we'll take care of the needs. If we have to, you know, I'm expecting that at some stage of the game there will be an emergency declaration. Along with it will become, I suspect we'll be asking for a preliminary damage assessment once losses are known, and we would be at that point anticipating asking for a presidential declaration to help us with recovery efforts. The one thing that you have to know is that we're going to try to do everything we can to prevent the damage from occurring in the first place. We'll ask for FEMA assistance if it's available to us, and we'll access as much FEMA assistance as possible to mitigate the damage before it occurs. But regardless of whether or not the federal government steps in or not, we will do everything we can to try to eliminate that damage across the state to public infrastructure rather than having to fix it afterwards. And if that means that we access the emergency funds of the state, we will do that under the emergency powers provided under the Constitution. If that does occur, we'll have to go back to the legislature and ask them for additional funds. In the past, in 1997, we did go back in special session, the legislature. I was majority leader then. We agreed to a short-term increase in sales tax and gas taxes. We actually put the sunset or the ending time and the beginning time on those bills when we passed them. But I think the legislature, once they get back in and they see the impact and the possible impacts in their homes, partisanship pretty much fades away in the face of rising floodwaters. So I expect we'll be able to work through those issues if it comes to that. Once again, we're hoping for the best, but we are going to plan for the worst.
Governor, this is Jonathan Ellis with the Argus Leader.
Yes, sir.
There was a great deal of debate this week on the effectiveness of the Recovery Act on its one-year anniversary, and I want to get your thoughts on that. Do you believe the act was beneficial to South Dakota?
Let me give you some examples, because I think we utilized it correctly. I think we used it the way that it was expected. Part of the, when you talk about stimulus funds, you're really talking about two parts. Part of it is state stabilization money. We used that to maintain our Medicaid services without going into our reserves. We also used education funding to maintain 3% increase for state aid across the state. So in both of those cases, I think we used the stimulus funds through the state stabilization plan correctly in both cases. It meant we delayed by a full year, making significant cuts in budgets that impact real people, both people that are receiving Medicaid and students who would be impacted if you cut education in terms of K-12 education. Second of all is what a lot of people call the stimulus funding, which in South Dakota we put it primarily into two areas. We put it into road reconstruction, rehabilitation, about $183 million, and about $38 to $39 million into water projects. We chose road reconstruction and rehabilitation and water projects because that's probably one area in which the next generation will see some benefit. They're going to pay the bill. Regardless of what you say, this generation is not paying for this stabilization or this stimulus funding. It's being passed on to the next generation. So our concept is if it's going to be disseminated across the states and if Congress has made that decision, and that's their responsibility, we would accept the funds, but we would do the most responsible thing with the funds, and that is put it into capital improvement projects. So the vast majority of it, I believe, has been appropriately spent within our borders. We've kept track of all of the funds that have been spent. We've done our best to put it into areas that the next generation would see the benefit of. I think rural water systems, improvements in clean water systems, I think those have all been positive things that will be here for years to come. The roads, I think the fact that we got $183 million in stimulus funds really allowed us to delay the implementation of a new gas tax in South Dakota, because a lot of those projects that we were able to do with stimulus funds, we would have had to have delayed until such time as we had additional revenue in the Highway Trust Fund. So in that respect, yes, I do think that the stimulus funds that we used in South Dakota benefited people in South Dakota.
Do you think they helped to create jobs or boost the economy in ways?
I think what they did, I think they helped to maintain jobs. I think they helped in some cases. We made some pretty good strides in putting people back into educational positions to where they could improve their educational background so that when the economy does turn around, they have more tools available to them. They got commercial driver's licenses and so forth. I think we helped positions so that as the economy turns around, they got a better chance at getting a job. I think we probably saved some teaching positions. I can assure you that we saved some school boards some anguish in terms of either using existing reserves or making drastic cuts in education in the last year if we would have had to have cut education. But we also protected state assets that we're currently proposing to use part of this year. So it delayed the onset of using reserves in this state. Remember, we've gone through the first 2 years of this national recession, and we haven't touched our reserves yet, which is a pretty positive thing to say. And we could not have done that if it would not have been for the state stabilization funds. We were also able to maintain and actually increase the number of individuals who have benefited from Medicaid services. 68% of the new increases are kids. 11% are people that are disabled. And I can assure you that their families appreciate the fact that those services have not been cut. And, you know, that's the safety net that we use in this state. So, you know, the other thing, if you take a look at water projects, private contractors do water projects, and they've got to hire people to do it. So we're going to see jobs that have been created to do water projects. Contractors that otherwise might not have had any work and wouldn't have hired people back to work last summer and this coming summer, those jobs have been saved because they got their job back to go to work working on highways. So in that respect, I think the stimulus did create the opportunity to save some of those jobs. I believe that. Did the stimulus move us out of this economic downturn? No, it did not. It did give us some breathing room, though. Now, the next challenge for us, the issue for us is how do we recover from this national recession? And that's a, you know, that's going to be a bigger picture. And part of the reason I think businesses have not really started hiring again is because of the indecision about what goes on with national policy. If you take a look at it, businesses want to know what's going to happen in terms of health care costs. Businesses want to know what's going to happen in terms of cap and trade or a tax on carbon, which is energy costs. They don't know right now, and they're concerned about that. Businesses, and specifically in South Dakota, you've had two power plants that basically are not being built because of the concern about what the additional costs are going to be for the cost of coal and what the tax would be on them using coal. That slowed down our economy and our growth in South Dakota. Financial services, new impacts. We're going to have 70 million people in America that had credit cards last year that won't have credit cards next year because of the changes in the ability of banks to extend credit. That hasn't been impacted yet. And so if you can't borrow money, in a lot of cases, you can't spend the money. And there were some really good parts to the financial changes, but there were a couple things that are going to make it more difficult to recover during this national recession. So we have not recovered from this recession. Revenues at the state level continue to be low, and we are not seeing a change. We are not seeing jobs being created at the national level, and we are not seeing jobs being created at the state level as of this time.
For the year of unity, talking about, obviously there's an emphasis on talk and listen, talking and listening. Are things going to go beyond just dialogue?
Yes, and in fact, that's the reason we started talking about a year of unity and when we should announce it, and I told the folks that came in to visit with me about it. I said I wanted it to be substantive. I wanted to know the action steps that we would take. And during the discussion today in the announcement, I will list out things that we're going to be working on in terms of healthcare, trying to get more data and working with the tribes and the Indian Health Service on getting more data so that we can pinpoint exactly what healthcare needs are and what we can do to improve them. Talking about educational opportunities. We're talking about cultural events. So I really wanted to put specific items into this to say these are examples of what we are doing now or what we plan to do in terms of the state working with different individuals and entities across the state to recognize a year of unity. But I also wanted then to challenge local communities to do the same thing, to find ways in which they can celebrate their cultural diversity, enjoy it, but also recognize how much we have in common, a way so that young people will see that it's not something to be afraid of. It's something that they should embrace, learn from, and enjoy. And so but we wanted to be able to set some specific examples, and we'll share kind of a litany of those things in our release today, in our announcement today.
Mr. Gilman, I'm just in District 27, and I'd like to help you with what you're talking about. When you get some time, take a look at Montana, New Mexico, I believe Utah, and Arizona. Look what those governors have done with their tribal constituents. I'm very impressed with Montana. They're doing some great things, and I'm glad we're talking about. We hear people sitting down and talking, but I see a lot of talking, but I don't see nobody sitting down. You know, and the bills that I have passed, we have the Tribal Government Relations Office. I've submitted a bill to look at the office to see if it's really working. And it was killed, party line vote. And so I just say that because it's getting back to what you talked about earlier, substantive, something concrete. I mean, that would be policy, that would be law, that'd be legislation, and it would speak volumes to Native people and non-Native, that we really need to sit down and talk, you know, about these things. And you will be leaving office now, and there'll be a new governor coming in, so, you know, we'll just go from there. But I just wanted to say that much. Look at those websites, you know, Montana's state website, and they're doing some awesome, very good things in those other states in regards to Native Americans. And here, I believe we have a lot of work to do. So if you could pass that on to the body, the Senate, and the House, and say, let's look at what we're doing and really focus in strategically, look at what's going on. Because you just like earlier you said, business has a lot of questions on, you know, what it's going to be like tomorrow, next year, business climate. We also have those questions, Native American. What is situations coming along now? The state has a legislation now to look at things that's going to affect gaming. We need to talk about these things before they become law. All parties, you know. So I just wanted to say that much, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Representative. I can share with the folks that every governor will have their own approach about how they want to resolve the issues of communication and dialogue with not only the tribes, but with individual members or Native American who either live on the reservations or off the reservations. I've chosen, and I believe with evidence of success, to have the office of tribal liaison specifically identified with our economic development efforts, because I think that's one challenge that we have on the reservations, is that it's really difficult for a business to come to a reservation when they can't own the land and when they have a difficult time in putting together an asset that they can then have there as a way to create jobs. You know, I don't think we have a single bank on a reservation. And when you don't have the ability to have, and I've talked with members of Congress as well as members of the administration about the challenges that Native American tribes have in creating business opportunities and jobs that are not government-related. And it is a challenge. And it's one that I think we have to work at having a very honest dialogue about what it's going to take to bring businesses into areas of our state that right now, they're reservation areas where businesses simply do not exist. And that's going to be a very difficult discussion to have. But nonetheless, it's one that I think needs to be started. What else can I talk about? Yes, sir.
Governor, just to go back to something you mentioned before. What I know it's early, but do you think there's a real chance you will need to ask the legislature for a tax increase or something like that to deal with the flooding costs?
We have to do our assessment first about what our needs will be. Once we have the assessment completed, we start with the local needs. We aggregate those. We find out what their resources are, what their needs will be at the township level, the county level, the municipal level. And then we'll look at what our state needs are going to be to basically finish up what they can't do. We look then at what the possibilities are of FEMA declaration monies would be, and then how much we expect the locals to pay, how much we'll participate in with their expenses, and how much the direct costs, say DOT, corrections, National Guard, and so forth will be. Once we have that done, then we'll decide whether or not we've got the resources or not. My expectation, there is a possibility that we may very well have to go back to the legislature and ask for additional revenues. I won't know how much. I won't know what type until I see what the actual aggregate amount of our costs would be. And if I was a legislator, I'd kind of want to know what that is rather than being asked to do something where I didn't know what my costs would be. So until I kind of have a better understanding about what the costs are, I won't be talking to them about an increase in revenues at this time. When the time is right, and I also suspect that a number of legislators will probably want to actually see the waters rising before they make a decision. As I say, if they have their high water waders on, it's a lot easier to start talking about revenues. So it'll be a while yet before we address the issues of enhancements of revenue specifically for this anticipated flood event. But it's not being ruled out at all. Anything else?
Have you had any discussions with other states and neighboring states? Or is South Dakota expected to be uniquely hard hit by this, or are other states also going to be in the same situation?
Based on what we've seen in our discussions with the National Weather Service, while it has focused on South Dakota, it's pretty evident that North Dakota is going to have some significant weather-related problems as well. And it's no surprise that the Red River is going to be a challenge. The James River will be a challenge. They don't have as much water behind the pipe stem dam on the James as what they had last year at this time. So there is some good news there in terms of the amount of water that's going to be held up there. They had a significant release that impacted the James in South Dakota last year. This year it looks like they're probably not going to have as near as large of an increase in the outflow from the James River, but at least out of the pipe stem dam in North Dakota. But they are going to have some challenges up there on the Red in particular.
Governor Dave Law, I came in late, I apologize, but what are you hearing in your office about the long-range forecast going into spring right now?
The Weather Service has shared with us that they expect to have lower than normal temperatures through the rest of the month of February. They also expect that there will be a little bit there's a possibility for the first time since January of a slight improvement in temperatures, probably the first part of March, but it will not have enough of an impact on the temperature of the snow to begin melting. So they expect that we'll maintain a snowpack later into March than what we normally would have. They expect that the ongoing temperatures in the upper Midwest and South Dakota will be lower than normal into the spring, and that they expect that the weather, the precipitation, will be higher than normal for the rest of the winter and into the springtime here in the upper Midwest. So it's not really a positive item in terms of the slowdown of the flood. If anything, it's going to delay the slow melt. It's going to delay the elimination of ice on the rivers. And it's really creating kind of a spring of 97 as kind of what this is shaping up to be, Dave.
Governor?
Yes, sir.
Are there any concerns at all? I know the water levels are high in the Missouri River Reservoir right now. Is there any concern that there's a problem in Missouri with the type of surface in the dam?
I'm sorry? Sorry? Say that again.
Any concern about the Missouri system this spring?
We have not had notification yet from the Corps of Engineers that they foresee flooding on the Missouri. But when you look at the prairie, the plains snowpack, clearly is above normal, and they have to compare that with the snowpack in the mountains. And the mountains normally get a significant part of their snowpack in March. So it's really too early to expect the Corps to be able to tell us what the combination of prairie snowpack, plain snowpack, and mountain snowpack is going to be. My understanding, only in brief conversations, is that right now it's not a big snowpack in both the plains and in the mountains, but it's pretty much above normal in a lot of the areas that will catch into the Owyhee Reservoir. So we're going to be watching it. We do know that some of the tributaries to the Owyhee, Grand and Moreau and Cheyenne, will have they'll be into flood stage. So we're going to have some above normal input into the Owyhee from those areas, and that's reflected in these river summaries that we've got here right now.
Governor, what advice would you give to the incoming governor here in regards to working with Native Americans? Because I know some topics, issues are, where we have common ground, but other issues, such as gaming, seems to be great divide.
Every governor will have their own approach on how they want to establish their relationships. There has to be a recognition of the citizenship, the dual citizenship of individuals who live on the reservations because of their dual citizenship with both a tribal membership and also that of being a citizen of South Dakota. You measure that along with the government-to-government relationships that you establish with tribal governments. And each governor will have their own approach on how they want to approach those two, which really, in a way, are separate. And so while I wouldn't suggest that I should give advice to the next governor coming in, I think each one of these candidates coming in would clearly love to be in a basis to express the best of goodwill and the best of intentions in continuing not only what George Mikkelsen started with the Year of Reconciliation, but I think that they all have a real desire to make things better for all South Dakotans. And I don't think that stops at the reservations. So I think each governor has the opportunity to put their own style in place, but I think they all, regardless of their party, regardless of their background, I think they all have a desire to see things improved. I think that just goes with most people that are in elected office in South Dakota as well. Anything else? Gentlemen?
Thank you.
If not, thank you all. Appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today.